pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Text line, if you want to be in touch with the show, all you do is hit me up there, 251-343-0106. Coming up here in about a half hour, my colleague from Breitbart News, Bradley J. So you want to stick around for that. Also on the program, April Marie Fogle and possibly a guest in the 11:30 block. We're still working on that. Let's get started here. And the only reason I'm bringing this up now, because it's on every channel, who's following the Clancy trial, like the postpartum psychosis, alleged murder? The closing arguments are now, they just did jury instructions. And it seems to be, and I'm going to tell you something, guys, when you start seeing a news cycle that leans into these like crime time and prime time court cases, it's a slow news cycle. They look at it as not a lot of fruit on the vine for politics. So they roll out the Nancy Grace or whatever. And they do these court cases, which are compelling, but they're just a straight up ratings play. They're not really promoting the agenda. So like CNN, News Nation, and Fox got the closing arguments in this Clancy trial. Newsmax is doing something about how great Trump is. And MS Now is doing something about how bad Trump is. So, the kind of tells you what you need to know there about the ideological leanings of cable news. But the trial itself is kind of interesting. I don't know. Are we buying this? What's the motive? So it looks like she was on a lot of different medications. If you're on that much medicine, we have supposedly a safety net to keep bad things from happening. How much culpability might these doctors have? So anyway, I thought that was, at least it's in the news right now, but bigger picture wise, and you know, some of you may care as much as about my new endeavors into sports talk radio, because it's not really policy, it's not politics, it's sort of a very isolated incident in Massachusetts. But tell you something though, like I think that the geographic leanings, political leanings will matter here. And it is not that far fetched in a blue New England state to get a jury that will not convict on murder, maybe on manslaughter. So this seems to be, there's a lot of high emotion about this. I guess I've kind of casually followed it, and I've seen a lot of people talk about it online, but I don't really know what to make of it, except that we know like the first top big trial in cable news that really was a ratings bonanza was the O.J. Simpson trial in the 1990s. And then, like, for about the next 10 years, you saw this a lot. You saw a lot of these court cases. Everybody was trying to recreate the magic of O.J. And I think the public just got desensitized to these, you know, spectator crimes being put on trial on round-the-clock cable news. And they started getting away from that. The Trump era came along, and then it really, like, people started tuning out of cable news. People started, you know, there's all these other opportunities for people to get their news, so you don't really need as much filler, so you just double down on the ideology. But this one's broken through. But I just, like I said, I think it's an interesting case in that it's got some dramatic intrigue, and then it's also kind of a weird time in the news because we're in the middle of an election cycle. And we're going into crime time and prime time. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, what you got to do is you got to text me. Let me know what's on your mind. And we will proceed from there. Trade war, Tommy Tuberville. Man, he is just the quote machine. I guess he was speaking to a chamber of commerce up in North Alabama in Limestone County, Athens. And Coach doesn't pull any punches, and he goes all in on the Trump narrative. So, but there's a reason he gets that Trump endorsement, and there's a reason why, you know, he's been a loyal political ally. That's at the top of the page. This is going to make you want to set your hair on fire. Guess who's back? Back again. The state of Alabama, under the guise of the Alabama Corrections Institution of Finance Authority, is looking at borrowing more money for the prison. And we tried to ascertain how much more they want to borrow. So today they're having their meeting, and they're going to borrow more money for a prison that's more than doubled in cost. This is bordering on malpractice. You don't tell the public you've got a prison for $630 million and 5 years later do this. And a governor who will not be held accountable. There's not going to be any accountability here. Not even rhetorically from our esteemed lawmakers who are just going to rubber stamp this today. Yeah, governor. Okay. See, on this committee, you got KIV. You have the prison commissioner, Greg Lovelace. You have Bill Poole, who are finance director. Rex Reynolds, the budget chairman in the House, the general fund budget chairman. Greg Allbrin, the outgoing budget chairman in the Senate. Bobby Singleton, the minority leader, and Cam Ward, the pardon parole bureau director. And they're just, they're going to approve this. The fix is in. They wouldn't be having the meeting today. But like I said, this is malpractice. You sold this bill of goods to the public. You sold it to the Alabama legislature. And you way lowballed the cost. Like, there needs to be some heads that roll here. This is embarrassing. If indeed this gets approved. And what's kind of, you know, they won't tell what the details are early on. They don't, you know why they won't. Why they won't say, hey, we're going to come back. Because they know that if the public gets word of it, if we start talking about it on radio shows like this and doing stories about a number, what will happen is you guys will organize against it. They don't want that. They're there ought to be lawmakers out there talking about this. They had to know this was coming. Some of them had to, who are on this prison bonding authority commission. Well, you know, have we been told specifically what went wrong here, other than inflation and the Biden economy? We can blame Biden for a lot of things, but I'm, you know, at some point, it's on you guys. It's incompetence. That you're not being upfront with the public. And we get some kind of happy talk statement from the governor's office about, you know, keeping Alabama safe. But they're just going to rubber stamp this, whatever you want. We're going to borrow more money. But I think, you know, we get a number here, all this talk about the fiscal responsibility of the Alabama legislature, just forget about it. What went wrong here? Why aren't we more upfront about this? This is embarrassing, and they know it. And they're hiding from it. They're hoping you won't notice. But they're going to borrow more money for a prison that's already more than doubled in cost. They did not go through the bid process, by the way. We didn't bid it out, so we didn't know how much it was going to cost. They just threw a number out there. Did this construction management thing where you don't have a fixed cost. And then nickel and dimed, well, I guess like million and billion their way. Into this exorbitant cost. And meanwhile, you know, the governor's like wanting to charge you a $8.80 toll or whatever it is. To cross the Mobile Bay. They're going to nickel and dime you there. But there's no responsibility. There's no culpability. There's no, not even like, hey guys, we really screwed up. We're really sorry here. Do we even know where the governor is? I heard about this yesterday, and like I said, the details, they aren't letting the details out of the bag early because, and I'm telling you why, it's going to be one of these things where you show up and they're going to vote for it and then the fallout will ensue and maybe it'll last a few days. But what they didn't want was any political pressure before the vote. So they're holding the cards really close to the vest. So we'll find out what the bond amount is. It's not clear to me, though, like what the did the legislature put this in that bill in that special session? What was it? In 21, 22, whenever it was, 21?
Let's take it on down from Muscle Shoals to Decatur.
251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Ooh, Montgomery. Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Sitting here at the Floribam, about to open up a big old can. Good time. Unwind.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the program. What you got to do? You got to text me, and I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Bradley J. coming up here in just a few minutes. My colleague at Breitbart News. Let's start here. Rock and roll doctor. I don't want to pick on any one person, but members of Congress like Jerry Carl tell you inflation and higher interest rates are destroying America's purchasing power and holding our economy back from getting the second gear, while the other side of the mouth is spending money on things we don't need, like Bike Pass from Weeks Bay to Magnolia Springs, which is creating an inflation problem. Why do we continue to elect these fools? I'm not sure who is more insane, the buffoon congressman or the voter. So, let me ask you this, because I think this is the case here, Rock and Roll Doctor. Whatever that, the money that was put into, for example, Bike Pass for Weeks Bay was, I suspect, something Jerry Carl didn't vote on. Well, first off, he's not been in Congress for 2 years. But Republicans typically, not voting for that stuff. And sometimes that money is out there. But what happens is the money's already been voted on, whether you voted yes or no. And it gets to the yes. And then it's offered to you. What do you say to it? Do you turn it down? That's, okay, I voted against this, but it's sitting there, and we could use a bike path, I suppose. Because if you don't spend it here, it's going to get spent somewhere else. And guess what? Your taxes are going to pay for it anyway, no matter where it gets spent. So, I don't know, the record roll doctor, I understand the gripe, yes. It's stuff that is contributing to the problem, but it's going to get passed. It's going to be there. What will the state do with the Meta settlement money? Asked Michael. That's a good question. I don't know. I talked to Joey about this yesterday on his show. Does the state really need more money to spend on something? I mean, how many PSAs about Instagram overuse are we going to get out of this? I think, Meta's probably getting off for a song here. With the surveillance state coming, you have to have a large amount of prison beds, writes unnamed texter. Tim, Jeff, I think anything and everything should be put out for bids. I think it ought to be against the law for the not to be in a bid process if somebody asked needs to go to jail over that. Well, what they did, I mean, that is the law. But when the legislature passed this, they waived that requirement. Why did they waive the requirement, you ask? So if you go back to that special session, you had U.S. attorneys like really, you better act fast now, Alabama, or we're going to take over your prison system. Whether that was ever a reality or not, I don't know. It's almost like they were in on the scheme here. So that enabled the governor and the legislature to do something dramatic and do a bunch of carve-outs to get this thing moving down the road. So they were able to say, okay, we don't have the time to go through the bid process. We don't have the time to do it this way and qualify bidders and put out a request for proposal. We got to act fast. And if we don't act fast, the federal government's going to come and they're going to act fast for us. And that was just kind of like, okay, well, hopefully we have prisons in a couple of years. And guess what? We still don't have a prison. A prison. So they used this, they created this sweetheart system for this contractor. It's Cadell Construction, Montgomery based, to move on it under these auspices of, hey, we're in big trouble here, guys. We got to do it this way or it's going to cost you a lot more. And then that turned out they didn't execute on, their justification for doing it the way they did it. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Or I may simply be a single drop of rain, but I will...
30, I'd be dead. But somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poehler Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. We'll get to some of your text. Just keep them coming. And if you haven't heard from me yet, I am working my way through the list, so we will get to them in short order. Joining us now, he's my colleague at Breitbart News. Figured I'd give it about a day to kind of marinate, but we had elections on Tuesday. Well, one in particular that was of interest in South Carolina, and I wanted to get him on to talk about. But Bradley, good morning. How are you?
Mr. Poehler, good to be with you today.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. We do appreciate it. Well, I'm telling you, I had, you could probably appreciate this. You know, Darlene Graham gave me the Luther Strange vibe. I didn't think she was a good candidate, and I still don't think she was a good candidate. But I kind of look at South Carolina and I look at the map and the counties and where Trump showed up. And I think this is a W for Trump's political team.
Hard to argue otherwise. I mean, this now 47 days ago when Lindsey Graham died, nobody had heard of his sister. And now she has been appointed to the United States Senate because of Trump. She has now won a term outright, a 6-year term, because of Trump. I mean, there's no other way to split it than, yeah, big victory for him. You can talk about whether she's capable or whether she was a good candidate or not. I mean, she really just, when you look at her campaign, and again, it was on a very condensed timeline, she didn't answer many questions about her record. Because she didn't have a record. She didn't talk much about her convictions except from a 30,000 foot level. She talked about how she's further to the right than her brother on immigration, but she couldn't really articulate that. She wouldn't give a response on what she would do about DACA. She was cagey on birthright citizenship in a way that suggested she wasn't actually sure what it was. This was Trump and Trump's team and the big, big money that supported her and hit real hard against Ralph Norman. I mean, it's a victory for all of them, but I mean, it's going to go down as a victory for Trump.
Yeah. Cause without Trump, she's not a U.S. Senator. I mean, she's maybe in an appointed capacity, but she's not going to be a U.S. Senator in 2027. But you know, he spent money. He came in, did the rally. Does that method translate anywhere outside of South Carolina that's up right now?
I'm not sure how much it translated to South Carolina. His endorsement still matters, but it's been watered down so much that on these types of occasions where he actually does make a meaningful endorsement, one that could potentially move the needle, you look across the nation, he endorses almost every single Republican incumbent except those who have, you know, outright opposed him. I'm thinking of, you know, like the Dan Crenshaws of the world, who then went and lost. He didn't re-up his endorsement in Florida of Corey Mills, who he'd endorsed like a year ago, but he didn't unendorse, but he went quiet on it even when he parroted or repeated his endorsement of the other Florida folks. And then Corey Mills, of course, lost because, well, he's in scandal after scandal after scandal. But it kind of loses his magic. So I don't think it's as meaningful when he does kind of go all out for someone like Darlene Graham Nordone. She styles herself as Senator Graham. I won't call her that. She went by Mrs. Nordone for 2 decades before she was appointed to the Senate. She's Senator Nordone to me. There's no doubt that she would not have been there without Trump and the Trump endorsement, Trump going all in, but there was all the other stuff that came with it in a very condensed timeline. I mean, the runoff was 2 weeks. The election itself was what, just a few weeks. So there were fight for all, you know, Trump's endorsement matters. But there was probably 5 million or more just in the 2-week runoff that was spent on her and to get turnout for her. There was at least a million spent against Ralph Norman by that green energy group that has had some success meddling in Republican primaries this year, going against people who fought against the Green New Deal. What's that tell you about Nordone, the fact that they supported her? I had lobbyists say, I mean, there are probably about 200 lobbyists in Washington, D.C., whose jobs relied solely upon Lindsey Graham. He was such an outlier in the Republican Party, and credit where it's due, he was very effective. Darlene kept on his entire staff. So they had a lot of interest in keeping that gravy train going. That is why so many lobbyists got behind her. And a lot of those lobbyists and the people who make money off him, those are Trump's friends too. I think that played a lot of a significant role in him backing Darlene just as much as his friendship with Lindsey. And look, people can kind of connect the dots here and start seeing that, you know, sometimes Trump makes endorsements, not necessarily because of an affinity for a particular candidate. But I mean, these are political. We've talked about this with the Alabama Senate endorsement earlier this year that was coordinated in a lot of evidence, I'll say, that suggests it was coordinated in conjunction with Club for Growth, when there was kind of a bunch of states in play and a bunch of numbers moving across the table. So, like, Trump makes his endorsements not necessarily because this is somebody who's a MAGA warrior or will be a MAGA warrior, but he has political considerations of his own as he keeps not just his voter coalition, but also support of him and his movement in D.C. I think people see a lot of that, or they can at least see that or feel that something's off. So I don't know that it was the endorsement alone that pushed Darlene over the finish line here. It certainly, you know, it wouldn't have happened without it. She won by 4 points. That's fine. But there are other things at play as well.
But I mean, like, and I say it like this, yeah, it's not the endorsement alone. It's everything that comes with the support outside of everybody who wants to kiss Trump's ring, also getting on board. But he does the rally. He spent $1 million, which seems like a lot for his political team to spend on a race. Because they seem to be.
I think it's the first money they've spent this cycle.
They're very stingy, you know. And all of a sudden, like, you have to look at it and, you know, this is different. We're in a place we haven't been in a long time where the second term incumbent president matters in the midterm. You don't have, I mean, maybe Obama mattered in that midterm, but you know, you look at it and the president tends to be very unpopular. Bush and Clinton were the last two in the second term of their presidency. And their party kind of ran away from them in some aspects. And I think that there's a desire by a lot of Republicans on Capitol Hill to run away from Trump, but they can't. They're stuck with him. And this, to me, the South Carolina outcome, I mean, it felt like it was going to be a Ralph Norman night all week. And, you know, I was surprised by it. I did not think she was a great candidate. Everything you just articulated about how she didn't seem like she was ready for prime time. But also, I mean, the whole ugly nepotism thing, and maybe having the Graham name on the ballot mattered, having some that builds up your name ID. But I'm telling you, like, you know, I think a lot of the stuff that Trump did push her over the finish line and pushed her into a place that I, you know, if you had a point spread going into that thing, you would have thought Norman by 2 or 3, and Graham Nordone or whatever you want to call her comes out by 4. It's a little bit of an eyebrow raiser.
Well, money is still the mother's milk of politics. And in such a condensed race where the runoff was only 2 weeks, and it was just 2 months ago, if that, where voters actually chose their primary nominee, they chose Lindsey Graham, then boom, he dies. Boom, there's a nominee or an appointee to his seat. Boom, there's a race. Boom, there's a runoff. I mean, all that happened so quickly that it's really there. I can't immediately think of a precedent or a parallel to that. So it's really hard for these campaigns to know how to handle it. But the one thing that is certain is that money is magnified in importance in a race like that. Yeah, there was a lot of buzz that both candidates going into the runoff had Norman up by 12, maybe 14 points. But that's one thing. First off, polling is very hard, and knowing who's going to be a likely voter, who's going to be motivated to get out in a race like that. But money is in this timeline is very effective in getting voters to the polls. Yeah, I mean, if you'd have just taken a referendum of every Republican primary voter in the state of South Carolina, would Darlene Graham have won that by four? No, I feel like Ralph Norman probably would have won. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Lindsey Graham himself wasn't terribly popular amongst Republican primary voters in the state. There's a lot at play here. There's also the fact that some people have raised that because this was a special, anybody could vote in it. You didn't have to be a Republican. Even, I believe, because the Republican primary had already taken place and this was a special, even if you had voted in the Democrat primary just 2 months ago, I believe you could have voted in this. There was definitely a big effort to get Democrats out to vote for Nordone. We don't fully know what behind the scenes was done by her campaign, or more likely the folks who were supporting her to do that. But there were definitely some Democrat politicians who were encouraging people to get out and vote for her. I mean, we've seen that. And I mean, you remember in Mississippi with Thad Cochran ran against McDaniel years ago in that runoff. And so many Democrats were mobilized to vote for the less bad Republican, not the actual conservative. This stuff goes on. Every race is different. Every state is different. You're right. Trump is still, if you're a Republican, you're with him. But also, I think that if you look at where Trump is making these endorsements in these races, the fact that everybody is sidling up to Trump, whether they actually support him and are a true believer or they hate him, it doesn't really matter. There isn't a lot of daylight between a lot of these candidates because you just have to run on Trump, Trump, Trump. And so what does the endorsement mean in those situations, you know?
Joined by Bradley Jay here on the program. He's my colleague at Breitbart News. Tell me about this. What's your take on this convention coming up? I see some writing about it. You know, Trump's going trying to milk some more money out of some of these members of Congress from their campaign war chest. I don't know how this is going to help in the midterms. And there's sounds like there's a little angst out there. But do you have a sense of what to expect out of this thing?
Again, money is the mother's milk of politics. It's very effective in it's one thing to have a platform and a message that people like, but it's a lot of work and a lot of money to actually get folks to register to vote, to fill out a ballot, to send in an absentee ballot, show up to the polls. That's why people like, you know, the Scott Presslers and all that get so much attention, because this is very expensive, time-consuming work that doesn't generally get a lot of it's not glamorous work. If you look at the convention and the lineup, I mean, yeah, Trump's going to speak. That's great. Vance is going to speak. I love it. It's going to raise a bunch of money. So in that way, if that money is used properly in the midterms, it can be effective. Like, I don't think that any speech given that night is going to do anything to move the needle one way or the other, unless Trump and Vance announce like some departure or something entirely different than what they're doing right now. Maybe that happens. I don't necessarily see it, But if the money that's raised from it by all the donors and the sponsors and everything is put to good use, then maybe it could be impactful in the midterms. As you said earlier, I mean, MAGA Inc. and its related groups, which are sitting at north of $400 million right now, everyone who is a Republican who's running in the midterms has been waiting for that money to be spent. So far, we're 68 days out from Election Day. There's only been about $1 million spent, and it's been in a primary in a very safe Republican state for someone who had been appointed to the seat just several weeks before in a pretty clear case of nepotism. So I don't know how the money's going to be spent, whatever money's gained, if it's going to just be retained until the 2028 cycle. I don't know how it would be spent then. It's difficult to see right now, though, how this – something would have to change significantly for the midterm to have any real effect at all on – or for the convention to have any real effect at all on the midterms.
Bradley, folks want to find you online. They want to check you out. How can they do so?
Breitbart.com and on all the social medias, the X and the Instagram at Bradley AJ.
Bradley, thanks for hopping on this morning. We always appreciate it.
Great being with you, Jess.
All right, Bradley J, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Daddy never was. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. April Marie Fogle coming up in about 45 minutes. In the 11 o'clock hour, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Porter Show, Parker Griffith coming in give us some time. Let's see. Sean writes, 75% of the American population is on SSRIs. That explains a lot. Daniel put a flock camera at her execution, referring to the woman in this Clancy trial. Interesting. The cable newsers, well, no, Fox and News Nation have stuck with it. CNN has bailed. And I'm not even sure Ms. Now's aware of it. Scrovery, I haven't followed the Lindsey Clancy thing and usually ignore those kinds of national news cases, but it's interesting how public views have shifted to supporting the killer from rallying against the likes of Kasich, Anthony, and Susan Smith. What happened to white privilege cries and we have to do better? Too many crazy women are enslaved to big psych pharma and see themselves in this Clancy kook. But, like, I try to keep an open mind. I mean, me personally about this, and I can't imagine. You'd have to be crazy to kill your three children. Now, does that absolve you from crime under the letter of the law? That's a question I can't answer. But do we think she was of sound mind and judgment when she did this? I don't, you know. If there was like a pattern of behavior leading up to this moment, and I haven't followed this trial, and maybe the prosecution was able to demonstrate that, then I would, that would be different. But clearly, I don't think she needs to get off scot-free here. You don't need to, there's got to be some culpability. Somebody, somewhere, has to be held accountable for this. So does it happen again? Ultra Runner, if it's a slow news day, could you do me a favor? Explain the sorry, Phyllis line that occurs at the end of your show. All right, for you, Ultra Runner, since you are a dedicated listener. Phyllis is I assume still listens, is a loyal listener of the program, who does not like the George Strait song, The Cowboy Rides Away. She says it makes her sad. So every day at 11:55 or whatever the song comes on, she had, or at least this is what she told us back when I started the show, she has an alarm on her phone that reminds her to turn off her radio. So she does not have to hear that song. And so by the time I'm getting out of the show and making my way to do whatever it is I do at noon, she's tuned out, so I apologize for not telling her goodbye before she tuned out. There you have it. We'll do that again in about a year. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Carry on, sweet Southern comfort. Carry on.